This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Boston, we've got the universities, the venture capital, the successful tech businesses. But do we have as many tech startups as we should? The short answer, at least according to Business Week, is no. They just ranked Cambridge as only the sixth best place for a tech startup, lagging behind Boulder, Colorado, and Boca Raton, Florida. So why isn't our ranking higher? We'll take a look at that question a little later this hour. And, you know, beyond that, if our ranking were higher, if there were more tech startups, that would lead to more much-needed jobs. How Massachusetts can and should be creating jobs has emerged as one of the most important questions in the 2010 gubernatorial campaign. On Radio Boston this week, we're featuring a series of conversations with the five gubernatorial candidates. Yesterday, we spoke with Republican Charlie Baker, and today, the incumbent, Democrat Governor Deval Patrick. Here he is kicking off his 2010 campaign.
Friends, 4 years ago, I asked you to take a chance, not on me, but on your own aspirations, on hope for an economy based on innovation and economic justice, on hope for better schools and decent health care, on hope for better politics. We have done what we said we would do.
So, do you think Governor Patrick has done what he said he'd do? And what does he still have to do in order to earn your vote in November? Join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Now, joining me now in the studio is Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick. Governor Patrick, welcome to Radio
Boston.
Thank
you. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have
you. Congratulations on the new format as well.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to have you here, and hopefully we'll have much more of you between now and November.
I like that.
Well, let me start with where you stand now in the gubernatorial race. It's actually fairly tight. I mean, we've heard these polling numbers before, but I'm going to say them again.
Oh, you're not going to do polls, are you?
I am, actually. 34% for you, 29% for Treasurer Cahill, and 27% for Charlie Baker. It's a pretty tight bunching. It's not the comfortable margin an incumbent might expect or wish to have.
Well, look, I think you know my view of polls. They are they matter on election day when the voters get to decide. And what has to be cautioned against for front runners or any other candidate in any campaign is not to let the polls either lull you or disappoint you.
Okay, see, I knew you were going to say that, so I have a follow-up to that question.
Okay.
And that is, polls done right, they do provide us with a snapshot of where voters' minds, values, and priorities lie. I mean, that's why the polling is done. So are you really saying that you don't care that people aren't, you know, people only give you a 2-to-1, actually, they only give you a 34% positive job rating? It doesn't bother you that Massachusetts isn't rallying behind you as a governor?
Well, no, of course you'd like that more, but for goodness sake, the election is in November. It's May.
But that's how people are feeling right now, looking at you right now.
And there's a lot of work to do between now and November. But the work we've been doing from the first day of the administration is where we should be focusing and what we'll be talking about in the course of this campaign. You know, we have we've been dealing, as every household, every business in the Commonwealth has been dealing, with the worst economy in living memory, which has had a devastating effect on the state budget. But we have delivered three budgets now that were responsible, balanced, and on time, not something many other states can say. Our AA bond rating has been reaffirmed by all three independent rating agencies. Again, not something many other states can say. We're first in the nation in student achievement, first in the nation in health care coverage for our residents, first in the nation in clean and alternative energy policy. Again, not many other states can say this. None of them can say that, in fact, and that's all on purpose because we've been focused on that, and we know if we get those and a few other areas right, the Commonwealth will be stronger for a long, long time. We've got a record of reform that is enviable, things that people have been talking about and fussing about for a long time here in the Commonwealth, and we've been able to get done, and I'm proud of that. And we've got the broadest public works program, rebuilding this broken and neglected infrastructure in the history of the Commonwealth, which is creating jobs today, but also economic value and quality of life out for a long, long time. So, no, we're not done. You know, if we were done, who'd need a second term? The second term is about finishing what we started, but we've made a lot of good progress.
Okay, well, let me ask you about what we kind of mentioned before and you just talked about, and that's jobs. I mean, there's a lot of evidence that said we're still hovering just above 9%. That's not far off the national average. It's a little lower then, but not far.
A little
far.
Bit better, yep. Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of evidence that says we're not going to get back to, you know, the pre-recession unemployment rate for many, many, many years. So all this is happening under your watch, and it's going to be happening through this November election. So do you worry that the continuously bad economy is going to hurt your chances for re-election?
Well, you know what? Believe it or not, and I don't worry so much about my chances for re-election as I do about making sure that people who need a job get one. And we've done a lot of work in this first term in transitioning this economy to the innovation economy of tomorrow, the life sciences and biotech, clean and alternative energy, IT. You know, you mentioned this. I hope we come back to that. You mentioned that in the opener mm-hmm. to the segment. Healthcare, education. These are the areas that have been growing even during the downturn. And we've got a lot of evidence to show that. But frankly, you know, if you're the one out of work, you could care less what the statistics say. You know, we've got we announced the Massachusetts Works Program, which is a leveraging of public money with private money, $4 billion in construction projects, hundreds of them all across the Commonwealth, 20,000 jobs. But the unemployment rate in construction is at the, 30% level in the building trades in particular?
In some towns and in some construction unions, it's as high as 40 or 50%.
Exactly. So this will help, but we've got to be about how we stimulate and rebuild the private sector economy, and the public sector, I think, can do its part, and we're trying to do our part right now.
Well, I also want to take a close look at, you know, your record in particular and claims that you make and your opponents have been making about your record.
Okay.
Here's one that you have heard before, but it's worth returning to. We spoke yesterday to Republican nominee Charlie Baker. And, you know, he says that you increased spending, state spending, 20% in your first year in office, that you spent money, he says, out of the rainy day fund before it was, quote, raining, and that the fiscal crisis in Massachusetts, you know, is occurring not just as a result of the national economy, but he kind of pegged it to you as well. Here's a little bit more of what he said yesterday.
On Governor Patrick's first day in office, he reinstated about $383 million worth of spending that had been vetoed out by the previous governor, and he ended the year with a $300 million budget deficit.
So in hindsight, do you think that was a good idea to reinstate those cuts?
Well, first of all, I think it was a good idea, but he's got his facts wrong. We didn't end the year with a $300 million deficit. We ended the year even, which is what is the reason why we reversed those cuts. Those cuts, I believed then and do now, were politically motivated. They were not fiscally required. And they had a devastating impact on people. And you know what? You better be thinking about the human faces and the lives and the best or only chance behind every one of those line items. We have delivered balanced budgets consistently. We did not begin to use the rainy day fund to balance the budget until it started raining. And it has been raining hard. And kudos, by the way, to my predecessors for having created the Rainy Day Fund and shoring it up over time. It's one of the reasons why Massachusetts, at least the Massachusetts state government, has not had to go quite so deep into recession as many, many other states. We're going to have to build that back up as we come out of this recession. And we've had to make a lot of very difficult cuts in programs, 2,500 positions eliminated from state government. There are fewer people working for state government today than there were when I started office.
Except that your opponent, Charlie Baker, says that you haven't cut enough jobs out of state government. The 2,500 or so that you've cut is nothing compared to the, you know, 4 to 8,000 that were cut under Weld
and
Romney.
He's going to say all kinds of things. Let me tell you what they did in Romney's in Weld's time. They cut, I think it was 8,000 jobs, half of them or so. They turned into contractors rather than on the state payroll so that they could say that they had reduced the state payroll, but they were still paying people to do the work. And the other half they did by way of an early retirement program, which has cost the state $375 million that we are still paying for today. So, you know, there's a right way and a wrong way to do this. We've eliminated 2,500 jobs. We've gotten furloughs. We've gotten the first concessions from the state employee unions in the history of collective bargaining, and I thank them for sharing in the sacrifice. We've done pay freezes and all the rest of it, frankly, just like businesses and local governments are having to do, and frankly, like households are having to do, make do with less.
You can join us with Governor Deval Patrick. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Mark's calling from Arlington. Mark, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hello, Magnus. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Governor Patrick. I don't mean to be critical, but I guess I'm going to be. There are, I can't say that I've seen the changes, any of the things that you say that you promised. And I have two things in particular in mind that are issues that I'd like to see you focus on.
Sure.
One of them, very early in your administration, you even set up a website, for people to propose issues that were of concern to them, and one that made it to, to the very highest number of votes for this is an issue lots of people are concerned about, was the issue of shared parenting. There had even been a referendum that got 85% support in roughly that time frame. And yet nothing has happened on that. That's item number one. Item number two, you keep touting, information technology, and yet you're not recognizing the fact that second only possibly to Hollywood, information technology is one of the most age-discriminatory industries that exists, and there are huge numbers of very experienced software engineers who are unable to find work.
Mark, let's pick that up. We've got a couple seconds before the break. Thanks for your call. We'll pick that up. Governor Patrick.
Well, first of all, on the shared parenting, and Mark, I don't know whether all the listeners will know what we're talking about. So, Magna, do you want me to give a little background on this?
Sure, if you could.
Well, there's an issue out there among parents who are divorced or divorcing about shared custody and shared parenting, and the ability of both parents to participate in the raising of children, something as the child of divorced and separated parents I certainly understand. There are laws on the books and presumptions in the court that favor the sharing of responsibility, but there is a sense among many parents that that the courts tend to favor the mother. I've heard this issue from a number of people. I have addressed this with the chief judge of the probate court, gotten her counsel on it. I've talked with my counsel about it, and I have offered to organize a task force to look on it. But I'm not quite sure that this is an issue that requires my action. Due respect to Mark and the caller.
On the tech jobs,
yeah.
We'll get to that on the other side
good,
of the break because
good.
It has
I hope
to do with
do.
The big issue, which is the economy.
Absolutely.
So, Governor Patrick, sit tight if you could. We'll get to more listener calls and questions after the break. If you've got a question for Governor Deval Patrick, give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and we're talking with the candidates for governor of Massachusetts this week on Radio Boston. Today, we're joined by Governor Deval Patrick. He's nearing the end of his first four-year term and looking to be reelected in November. Do you think the governor's accomplished what he set out to do? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or join our comment thread at WBUR.org/Boston. Governor Patrick, before the break, Mark asked a question about the tech sector.
Yes.
Also, I'd like to actually broaden that out a little bit and remind you of a promise that you made when you were running for governor the first time. This was something that was brought to our attention by some users on that comment thread, WBUR.org/Boston. Nick Whitaker and Lauren, they both emailed us questions asking, where are the 100,000 new jobs that you promised in your last campaign?
They went the way of a global economic collapse. We were on track. We were making good progress in the first year and year and a half. We are on a plan. We have continued on that plan. But meanwhile, the private financial sectors, as you know, dissolved. A lot of construction stopped. We had now. I will say that the areas that a couple areas where we've concentrated on, there's continued to be growth. The life sciences and biotech. very, very important for the here and now. And by the way, those are not all jobs in the lab. That's a misconception out there. There's a company, for example, from the UK called Systagenics, which put their headquarters for the Americas in Quincy, and not a single one of them is a lab job. They're IT and human resources and customer care. Companies from overseas and from elsewhere in the country have begun to concentrate here, really taking advantage of this supercluster.
Actually,
the clean tech sector.
Let me ask you about that, Governor Patrick, because we hear a lot about these tech and biotech sectors, and you've obviously put a lot of your political capital and passion into that. But one of the reasons, for example, that House Speaker Robert DeLeo really pushed his casinos bill, and you agree with most of that, if not all, is, you know, the blue-collar recession that's happening here, the blue-collar collapse, actually, that's happening.
That's
here.
Right. That's right. Well, you remember I was the first one to make the casino
That's correct. I'll give you credit for that.
And it was precisely that reason. Now, I want to acknowledge there are thoughtful views on either side of the question of expanded gaming. It's not an easy question. But on balance, I think there's a right way to do this, and the right way to do it is with a limited number of these so-called destination resort casinos, because we get more jobs and we get those jobs at higher wages and benefits. And that's where the Speaker and I are in agreement. We are not in agreement on the slots at the tracks for the same reasons, because I just don't believe that you get the same pickup in terms of jobs and jobs at good wages and benefits. But we're going to work our way through this. The Senate has their turn now, and he's asked me to keep an open mind, and I intend to keep an open mind.
Does that mean a compromise is possible?
I think I hope a compromise is possible, but as I said, I'm not persuaded on the slots at the tracks for the reasons I've said, because I don't think we get the jobs at the same number or at the same level, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously, the national economy and the national recession that we're experiencing now, Massachusetts was not immune to that. But when you think about how voters look at you and your record so far, I mean, it's not just the fact that the stock market crashed and the unemployment's so high. I mean, people have memories. They remember those early missteps that you took, the curtains in the governor's office, the Cadillac, you know, all those things. It seemed like whatever you think, if they're minor or not, these are the things that remain in people's minds, in part. So do you feel like that you still have a long way to go to prove that the other tasks or accomplishments that you made have overcome those early missteps?
First of all, look, you know, I ran for governor, not saint. You know, there's a...
Some of those missteps were gaffes with a capital G.
Well, that's fine, but I still think substance matters, Magna. And I don't underestimate... the voters of Massachusetts, and I think that to them, substance matters, and there's an awful lot of substance we have delivered. Now you started with the polls, all those polls have me winning, but you still talk about me as if I'm clinging by my political fingernails. I am not taking anything for granted. We have a very, very strong record to run on. We've got reforms that folks have been talking about, you have been reporting on for a long time, that we have delivered, whereas others have only talked about them. But having said that and talked about the accomplishments in education and healthcare and the rest, the second term is not a reward for the first. It's, for me, about finishing what we started. If we'd done everything we said we wanted to do and there was nothing else to do, believe me, I'd be right back in the private sector.
Okay.
But we're on a good path here, and I want to keep it going.
You know, so you spoke of me specifically and said things that I've been reporting on, and I suppose possibly you mean transportation, because that was my beat here at BUR before I had the honor of joining Radio Boston here. Well, let me ask you about that, because I think it's indicative of the way people might not have some trust in what you're saying, because, for example, that transportation reform bill that you signed that brought everything under one roof that was supposed to save the Commonwealth hundreds of millions of dollars
in the
long
run. And
it saved
a quarter billion in the first year.
Well, that contradicts what Jeff Mullen, your own transportation secretary, told me. He basically said all those promised savings that we were supposed to get, it's not going to materialize anywhere near the degree that we were told when that bill was signed.
Listen, Jeff Mullen and I are in exactly the same place on this, and that quarter billion is real, and most of it comes from being able to do away with those swaption deals, which you know about, that had been put in place by previous administrations. And because we're on a sounder and more secure financial footing and a much better organization, we're able to negotiate those away. there are tens of millions of dollars of dollars in health care costs, for example, that are already being saved the taxpayers because everybody is in the GIC, the state employee health care system. And there is more to go, to be sure. This is going to take time, but that is real. That's real savings, and it's right now.
Governor Patrick, savings and costs, these things always come together. So let me ask you another thing about a major issue that people here obviously are worried about, and that's health care and increasing costs.
Yes.
You basically sort of won a battle by judicial decision recently in terms of capping or limiting premium rate increases for health insurance providers here in the state recently. But the flip side of that is that you've also said to health insurance to healthcare providers themselves, don't make me come in and regulate or cap what you're charging. Is that the next step? Are you going to go that far?
Well, first of all, what we have proposed is a bridge to a long-term solution, and that long-term solution is sometimes called payment reform. You may know that this broad coalition, and it's a really wonderful coalition that came together to invent healthcare reform. And has stayed together to adjust it as we've gone along, has been the source of the commission we put together to try to deal with costs, system costs. And after 2 years of work, last fall they delivered recommendations in the form of payment reform, which is to move away from this practice of paying for the amount of health care and move instead to paying for the quality or the outcome of that health care. Great idea. And then the very first thing they said was, please be gradual in implementing these. 5 years is viewed as fast. Well, it's a great idea. I still think it's the right destination. But right now, we have an economic emergency, especially for small businesses and working families. And that's why I propose to use the existing authority in the insurance commissioner to disapprove unreasonable and excessive rate increases. And believe me, when you talk to these small business owners, and I talk to them all the time, they tell me they're seeing the commercial activity to justify hiring one or two or three people. But then they get that 24, 35, 45% increase in their insurance premiums, and they can't see a way to do that. So this is about giving them some relief right now. And the insurers came back and said, well, you know what? You got to deal with the underlying costs. The provider costs, the hospitals and doctor practices and so on. And we've asked the legislature to give us authority there as well. But I don't want anyone to have the misimpression. I know you're giving me the signal to wrap up. I don't want anybody to have the misimpression here that this is a permanent solution. This is about a bridge to that long-term systemic solution, which is payment reform.
I was giving you the signal, but that doesn't mean that we don't want you back again. We want you back here many times to talk about all these issues in depth. But I did want to throw a couple quick questions to you before we do have to let you go.
This is the lightning round?
actually, one of these is going to be in response to another one of your opponents in the gubernatorial race, and that is, of course, independent candidate Treasurer Tim Cahill. This morning, he actually proposed offering tax relief to newly formed businesses in the state, and he offered his comments at the Chamber of Commerce breakfast in Boston. Here's what he said.
We want to hopefully build the next Stacy's Peters or Cape Cod potato chips or Dunkin' Donuts here in Massachusetts, because this state is a home for many, many entrepreneurs and many founders of many businesses.
So, Governor Patrick, what do you make of Treasurer Cahill's plan? And also, his plan actually includes across-the-board tax cuts and rolling back that sales tax, the income and sales tax, back to 5%.
Well, I haven't seen the whole plan, but I can comment on the pieces of it that I've been asked about, and I want to be respectful of the whole plan. So, I want to have a chance to look at it. But I think people should be clear. We have already cut the corporate tax rate. We did that in this administration. It started this year, and it goes down each of the next 2 years.
But
we
that
have
doesn't
a whole
help
source.
Individual taxpayers. I don't feel like I'm feeling the benefit of a corporate tax break.
Well, you just asked the question, I thought, starting with what the treasurer was
That's
proposing
true.
Around.
That's
so
true.
I wanted to start
okay.
there. So that we've done that. We also have a host of incentive programs to encourage investment, and they are working. Film tax credit, the life science tax credits, and so forth. They're manufacturing tax credits, and they are all parts of packages that we use to entice businesses to stay here and invest or to come in and invest. Now, the question about rolling the sales tax or the income tax, fabulous idea, great idea when the time is right. And unless we're ready to have a conversation right now about what services people are willing to give up, then we're not having an honest conversation about it. And I have asked Tim and Charlie, both of whom have talked about this, start talking about what you cut. Are you going to gut health care? or support for the public schools or senior services or what have you? Because believe me, I'm dealing with these issues. I've been making these cuts trying to get this balance, this budget balanced, and I know what's behind those line items. So as I say, until they're ready to start telling us what it is they're going to advocate doing without, then I don't think we're getting very serious proposals.
Well, there's obviously a number of issues that are on the minds of Massachusetts voters. At WBUR.org/Boston, we've received comments from Matt about Cape Wind and the green economy. Laura also asked, do you plan to increase state education and funding to cities and towns? I know we don't have time to get into that now. That's a big one.
Oh, come on.
We'll have you back here on Radio Boston, if you make a promise, as many times as possible to take more of these calls
and questions from listeners.
Let's do it.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Governor Deval Patrick, thank you so much for being with us.
Great to be with you.